Hello, everyone. My name is Kayla.
And I'm Steph. And welcome to the Witch Story Podcast.
Witch Story Podcasts discuss real cases of witch trials, tales, and other stories related to witchcraft. As always, Steph and myself are trying our best to shed light on the true histories of witches and persecutions that are ongoing today. Before we begin, this episode in particular on Valpurga Hausmännen will feature sensitive subject themes of violence and sexuality. You may want to skip this episode if it is not right for you. For today's episode, we're going back to Germany once again, in the same region as our episode on the Pappenheimer family, the region of Swabia. Turns out there's quite a lot of witch trials from this region, so this probably won't be our last trial from Swabia. But today's story will be specifically on the trial of an old widow named Walpurga Hausmännen. Okay, Steph, do you remember me sending you a YouTube video of...
Yes. Yes, you don't have to finish the rest of that sentence.
No, I think we have to explain it to everyone. So basically, the individual in the video was by themselves in what looked like, I think it was their kitchen. And they were by themselves on camera, supposedly possessed by Walpurga, the witch that we're going to talk about today. And it was almost like, you know how YouTubers just like sit there and like the camera's on them? So it was like that, like they were just like sitting at a table. But it was very odd and disturbing in a way. Like nothing theatrical, like stuff flying around, like those horror movie possessions. But, and like, although I only watched 20 seconds of it, it was still like very eerie. How would you describe it?
I would just say, I don't know how I'll go about it, but like, you know, usually in a video when you're possessed, it looks very dark around you, or there's a bunch of candles and like just some, there's some other creepy aspect to what it's supposed to like make you feel and look like. But this person was possessed in the middle of the day in their kitchen, I think. And it was very bright in there. To be honest, that might have made it a little more creepy. So maybe that worked for him. I don't know. But I liked the idea, but I just don't think it worked very well.
It's interesting, like, the lighter horror movies now, like Midsommar, though, where
it's
definitely creepier, like you said. Like, how do I phrase this? Why does the demon or entity possess you at nighttime, or the bad evil things happen only at nighttime? Do demons care what time it is?
Exactly. I think what should scare us more is that there's no reasoning as to why somebody would be possessed or when they should be possessed. Like there shouldn't be some ambience that has to be set for somebody to act like that or something. Like if we're going to be scared, it means the situation is abnormal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the middle of the day in your kitchen and the sun is shining and it's super bright and you're just with someone and then they just start talking really oddly in a strange tone of voice and their eyes roll back, I'd be pretty scared, you know?
Yeah. With that picture in my head, I think we can start our story on Walpurga Hausmännen and her demon. Well, did I pronounce that right? Walpurga.
Yes. Walpurga or Federlin. Federlin. Federline?
Kevin Federline?
What?
Wait, was that not his name?
Federline the demon I'm talking about.
I know. I know, but I thought you were making a joke. Okay, never mind. That backfired.
Oh, that was good.
The exact date of birth is unknown, but it is speculated that Walpurga Hausmännen was born between 1510 and 1527 CE. Walpurga does not have a record of having children. In fact, we don't know much about Walpurga's family life or early life, but all that is known when her witch trial did begin was that she was an old widow living alone in Dillingen, Swabia, and working as a midwife. She worked for over 30 years as a midwife until she was accused of witchcraft. And her confession, let me tell you, it was pretty shocking. Federline came.
When we go through that, I'm going to laugh the whole time. I'll try really hard not to, but I will.
I'm leaving it in. I don't even care. So, while Perga did admit she was lonely after her husband passed away in 1556, and as a recent widower with, as we know, probably no children or family, she had planned to meet a male coworker at her home. And she didn't deny that it probably was for a little hanky-panky. However, instead of her coworker coming over, a demon arrived dressed in her coworker's clothing.
Kevin Federline.
Ew. While Perga took this man to bed, believing it to be her coworker still, but as soon as she felt a hard hoof, she knew that she was in bed with an evil being, a demon, and this demon had a name. And as you guessed, it's Federlin. And while Perga was so scared that she prayed to Jesus, but instead, as you know from our podcasts, that didn't work out. And instead, the devil came.
Mm-hmm.
When telling her story, well, actually, this wasn't a story. When we read about this, this was probably all the information that came from her trial, her confession that she was tortured for. So while Perga's account became more and more fantastical because they probably wanted more out of her, her first confession that when she just slept with this evil entity or demon, it wasn't enough for the people. So when she starts talking, she brings in now the actual devil, and the story just becomes even more dramatic. While Perga had described when meeting the devil, he came to her in this rich, lavishly clothed looking ensemble as a prince with a gray beard. And the devil made a contract for her that she willingly signed in her own blood. This contract was an oath that she agreed to take, promising her body and soul to him. In return, he was going to pull her out of the poverty that had come to her when she became widowed when her husband died. And after she signed this oath, the devil rebaptized her under her new name, Hoffelin. And I looked up the name Hoffelin. I was hoping for some Germanic translation, but it just seems that Hoffelin might have been a popular surname. And while Perga also mentioned that she had dinners with the devil, and when she dined with him, which had become a repeated occasion, she mentioned never using salt. And this is a very peculiar comment because salt is a symbol of sanctity and protection, which was never to be used on a witch's Sabbath.
This is true. Yeah. And like, you know, the tradition of like, if you spill the salt, you have to throw it over your left shoulder. It was always the left side because that's where the devil was cursing him. Like salt, like, I guess because of its like acidic properties, it would purify or like protect maybe. And people still do this today. Like even I do it sometimes if I get like really scared or something like that. Like you just make a circle of salt to protect yourself, or you put it at your door to like reject any negative spirits, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I watched way too much Supernatural to know and to make sure that there should be no cracks in that salt line either.
Yes. No. Or The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Yes. Or Hocus Pocus. There's also that one. Yeah.
Yes.
When they go to the graveyard and then, you know what I mean? You've
and
seen
what,
it probably.
What do you do with your salt after it's done protecting you?
I guess I clean it up, or like, I think the traditional way to be to sweep it away. Like you sweep it up and you throw it out because it's served its purpose. I wouldn't reuse it for sure. I would probably throw it out, but that's
oh no, yeah.
That's that's what I would do. I know that other people probably have different ways of doing it. So
yeah, sweep it and toss it outside.
Yeah, exactly. Toss it over your left shoulder.
Or that. Just make sure don't toss it on any plants, because that could really harm the plants.
Yeah.
Side note.
Yeah, don't do that.
So now we have Walpurga, or I suppose Hafelin, and the devil regularly having dinners together, probably with the demon as well. And during these dinners, it was most likely asked, well, what did they eat? Walpurga said they had either red or white wine, and for their meal, they ate either a pig roast, or if she could get her hands on it, a small child.
I was just about to say that sounds like a luxurious meal until you said small child.
I think a small child's luxurious. You have to go through all the troubles of getting it, cooking it. No.
Ugh. I was like, I don't know if I should laugh at this.
No, I'm saying like it would be an expensive meal.
That's true. I mean, there's a lot at risk when you're doing that, you know, like it's illegal. So I guess in that sense, it would to them be a luxurious meal and not murder. But
Oh, yes. I'm not saying it's a luxurious meal for me. For them, it might have been. And while Purga and the devil would also partake in intercourse together at these dinners, and they even made a little ritual. And this ritual was that they would steal the Blessed Sacrament from the church on these Sabbaths.
Sacrament. Well, when I read it, I think of French and they say sacrement.
Yeah.
So like, that's how I remember it.
Did you just swear because we have to make the...
Oh, stop.
I'm totally kidding. I feel like we talk about all these like torture and like horrible things that happen, but you swear in French and now I have to make it an explicit podcast.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, well. While Purga said that Federlin the demon remained a part of her life due to the contract that she signed. The demon made her do horrible, horrible things, such as perform sexual acts in public and later in her own prison cell. He had also given her a salve, a magical salve, which she rubbed on the bodies of young mothers and children in her care, all of which died shortly after. Apparently, it was noted that she tried also rubbing the salve onto the governor's wife in an attempt to harm her, but the governor's wife wore a special necklace with blessed metals on it, so the salve did not work. And you'll see in Walpurga's case, as well as other trials, even the Pappenheimer case that we covered, that the accused witch will end up taking the blame for numerous, numerous deaths in the town. And when going through all these deaths, every single one will have their identity, like the full name, all of the information in it. But it was not possible that she could have killed all these people. Like there's no time for that, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah.
This case is so different. Her story is so much more detailed. Mm-hmm. The way the story is told, it seems like that she's proud of this. Other than the other people who definitely were not.
Yeah. So. There also is a correlation, like the last case we covered, the Shega trial, that case that we covered, there was also a midwife. And I think we'll see now that in a lot of cases, midwives are to blame because of the infant deaths. And obviously it was not their fault, but like, who else would you blame? Like there was a direct... Yeah, the only person there delivering the child, you would think that in their hands that your child would be safe. But if it didn't work out because of unforeseen circumstances, like now it's the midwife's fault.
Yeah, like they're the last ones that were responsible for handling your child's life. Mm-hmm. So they're not part of your family. So like you don't fully trust them. It's so easy to blame them for sure.
And she also fits that stereotype of like an old widower living alone. And this salve that she made was probably just, you know, one of her own herbal remedies, but
when you said salve, I'm wondering like what was in there exactly. Like that's a topical thing, right? Like that's just an ointment that you put on your skin. Mm-hmm. So like what properties were in there that your skin would absorb and then kill you? Cause that's like, that's pretty powerful stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, like I'm so curious as to what that was.
I even think that, well, first of all, there could have been no salve at all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like if this story was true is what I'm saying. Yeah.
There are certain plants around that area that like maybe if you take a lot of it, I don't know if you would die because like poison ivy, poison sumac, all of that stuff, you wouldn't die.
No.
But maybe if you're like seriously allergic to a certain type of herb,
mm-hmm.
if you put a lot of it on your skin, you could die.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Like I'm just trying to think of something that you would just put on your skin that you would die from. And I can't, like nothing really like immediately comes to my mind.
I know if you ingest certain.
Exactly. That's what I thought of. I'm like, if you ingest things, you could definitely die, but this wasn't ingested. This was just applied topically.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know that there was something called like a flying ointment.
Oh that, yeah.
Yeah. But that wasn't supposed to kill you. That was just supposed to have like, or just give you a wild trip, to be honest. So, but there were some pretty toxic properties in like, or, ingredients in there, like belladonna, henbane, mandrake, hemlock, wolf's bane.
Yeah. And I'm sure if you ingested all of that,
probably
that would do the trick. You're pretty dead.
Yeah.
In her confessions, Walpurga said that she'd be doing this for 12 years. And in those 12 years, she managed to kill 41 infants, 2 mothers, 9 cows, and a variety of animals, including a horse, pigs, geese, and she also said she killed crops. And besides these kills, she also attacked more animals and people. In these confessions, she listed every single person that she killed at birth with full descriptions on how she had done every single crime. So some of these she said that were done by either rubbing that poisonous salve on them, but she also said she killed them by drowning, strangulation, and even she said she pressed children's brains in, and that's how she killed some of them. And she said that most of these children that she killed were unbaptized, and often she had also sucked their blood or use their hair and bones to perform diabolical spells, such as hailstorms, which she then used to kill the crops.
Interesting. Something's mentally not right with her. Or because all of these things happened, all of these people died, all the crops are dead, they convinced her that she needs to take the blame so that she could be the scapegoat. Mm-hmm. And then since she's older and she maybe didn't care about her life after her husband died, maybe she just willingly took that blame, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to say what really occurred here.
We'll never know the truth. And that's kind of sad.
And back then, they wouldn't have taken into consideration any of these mental illnesses. But, you know, who like you said, who knows? Like, what if she was actually a crazed serial killer? That happens, but
yeah.
We'll never know that. And it's kind of hard because like we're trying to bring like all of these people justice by like telling their stories, but we also don't want to bring any justice to somebody who was actually a murderer, but we just don't know.
Well, yeah, I guess like you could go by the phrase, everybody's innocent until proven guilty. But the hardest part is that we can't prove it. We can't.
Obviously, at the time, Walpurga was proven guilty, and she was sentenced to death by the Archbishop Marquard of Augsburg and the Imperial Court. Walpurga was not allowed to be given a fair trial either, because in Germany, witchcraft was punishable by law under the common law and the criminal code of Emperor Charles V and the Holy Roman Empire until the 18th century. And furthermore, she was not only a witch, but she committed murder. She was, you know, cohorting with the devil. That was punishable as well. And the fact that she said that she sucked these young children's blood, that's another penalty. I mean, that was vampirism. So she was punished for all of these crimes.
I did some research on Augsburg. Augsburg wasn't originally, like, I guess, a capital city. It was actually in Dillingen before, but it was moved to Augsburg. And Augsburg is run by a prince bishopric. And that also means secular law and clerical law are one. That's basically what that means. So, like, anything that the church deems inappropriate or against their law or rules, then that means a person is allowed to be persecuted because of those things, even if it's secular or not.
Right, right. And once they deemed you guilty or made you guilty for something such as witchcraft, you really had no way out. You couldn't argue your case against anyone, really. And it seemed like in Walpurga's case, she was one of the more popular trials in the area at the time, and it would have received a lot of attention towards her, but all negative. And the brutality against her really lasted until the very second that she died. Even on her way to the stakes to be burned, like, she already knew she was going to die. She was thrown into a cart and paraded down the streets while villagers would have stopped to mock and mutilate her. I mean, you know, back then they didn't have a TV or anything, so this was a sight to see. This was the only form of really entertainment, as unfortunate as that sounds. And, you know, as much as people love true crime today, this is the 16th century version of true crime unfolding right before their eyes. It was said that Walpurga was stopped to be tortured 6 times before she was finally taken to the stake to be burned. She would have been impaled and cut and yelled at. Stuff was probably thrown at her. She was burned with hot iron rods. She was really, really brutally tortured. And the last stop that was made before before she was put on the stake was that her right hand would have been cut off due to her betraying her midwifery oath. So this was an act that was done in symbolism, where when you swear in your midwifery oath, your right hand is placed on a Bible. So this was the reason they actually ended up cutting off that hand if you betrayed it.
Yeah.
Following this, Walpurga Hausmannen was burnt alive at the stakes. She passed away on September 20th, 1587, around the age of 70. Since she was not allowed to be buried, her ashes were tossed into the nearest flowing water source, and her remains are unknown because of this. It didn't matter if it was a river or a puddle, it just had to be moving water. Her property and belongings were also confiscated and given back to the city, since she had no family to pass it down to. Today, in memorial, a plaque was set up by the Rotary Club commemorating the victims of the Dillingen witch trials, which include Walpurga Hausmannen. It was unveiled on December 12th, 1994, in the Dillingen Palace courtyard. And that is our story of Walpurga Hausmannen. Looking back at this trial, one thing I do want to touch upon that I thought would be interesting to discuss is when Walpurga was confessing, she said that she rubbed the poisonous salve on people and they began to die because of it. But she did mention that she tried to rub it on the governor's wife, but the wife was wearing that protective ornamental necklace or medallion. And I do think that this might have been added in some sort of, as a religious propaganda. You know, if you believe in God and you wear his protected symbols on you, you will be safe, you know?
That's so true.
And just to add on the religious propaganda, Walpurga's accusation of a relationship with the devil will be something that we're going to see similarly in later witch trials in Germany. It always seems that the woman who is accused of a witch will have some sort of sexual relationship with a demon or a devil. But in Walpurga's case, what really happened, you know, she may have been a victim of mental illness, a victim of witch propaganda, of vampirical propaganda, or, you know, she may have actually been a crazy psycho serial killer. Well, we're never going to know. And like we always mentioned, this was a time of low mortality rates. So when children die, of course, you're going to blame the old midwife.
Sad case. But I don't know. I feel like also back then, though, people were always prepared for their children to die. Like people literally named three of their kids the same name. Because they expected one of them to die, at least, or two of them. Like, not that I'm saying that that's okay at all. No. I don't want that to happen, but people were expecting it so much. So it's still a bit disturbing to me that they need to find somebody to blame for those deaths when it was such a common thing.
Yeah, even my dad. So on his side of the family, they grew up in Poland and Germany, and his name is Conrad, and he has a sister named Utah. And it wasn't until very, very recently that he actually found out, because I was doing a little archival digging, his father actually had a brother and sister named Conrad and Utah that he was probably named after that died really, really young. But he didn't even know this because my grandpa, his father, probably didn't even tell him about those siblings that passed away so young because it was probably just not a thing you talk about, you know? Whereas now, I would think that if you have a sibling or a child die young, you would commemorate them. You would want to tell their story because it is a very rare thing to happen. We're not prepared for it to happen in our culture today.
Yeah.
I just need a huge exhale after that episode. I feel like it was super, this was kind of hard to get through for some reason compared to the others, even though they're all pretty brutal, you know? Do you ever feel like if someone has the same birthday as you, like it's kind of like a coincidence or something?
There's a sign. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she was burned on September 20th, and that's my birthday. I don't know. So it kind of was just like, oh, like a sad thing.
I have to tell the story.
But we did it. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And as always, at the end of our episodes, we would like to include some sources available for you that we used. One of them was called Walpurga Hausmännin. It's a book readily available online. It's only 96 pages long. And also an article called Judgment on the Witch Walpurga Hausmännin by E.W.M. Monter in European Witchcraft. It's also a free PDF document that I found online. And with that, we would like to end our episode today with a huge thank you to everybody once again for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe and rate our podcast. It would help us a lot. And if you would like to send us a message, feel free to email us at witchstorypodcast@gmail.com and follow us on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at witchstorypod. We hope you tune back in again next week for another episode. Thank you. Bye, everyone.